Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to episode 27 of Blue Jays Happy Hour. I'm Nick Ashbourne, joined as always by Andrew Stoughton. We are kind of in the last doldrums of the offseason that's happening right now. So there are still people being signed, there's still rumors flying, trade talks. And the first kind of big event in the Blue Jays sphere that we need to talk about that happened since we discussed it on the last pod is the Steven Matz situation. It seemed like there was a bit of a Steven Matz Derby. We heard there will be a decision by Thanksgiving, which was a little bit odd. Maybe he just needed that peace of mind to really enjoy the holiday. And Steven Matz is now a St. Louis Cardinal on a four-year contract.
4 years for a ex-Blue Jays lefty from the Cardinals. What could go wrong?
Yeah.
Steven Matz is a valuable guy. I don't think he's a guy you'd like cry about if you don't re-sign him, which I don't think most Blue Jays fans are doing, but good for him. Get paid, get that fourth year. I was shocked that he got four. I thought I think most predictions had him hit two or three, and that's if you gotta get that extra, if you gotta put an extra year in to get Steven Matz, that's what you gotta go out and do, I guess.
I thought the Cardinals had the Cardinals way going, and that would be the tiebreaker, and they wouldn't need the extra year.
Well,
but I guess it's a different era now.
Yeah, I mean, if the Mets had tried harder, if the Mets had a proper baseball operations department, they may have been able to get that done themselves.
That was a pretty hilarious. I mean, I think Steve Cohen is great for baseball writ large. Like, if I was a Mets fan, I wouldn't be. I don't know. I mean, he's clearly willing to spend money, so I don't know how angry I would be about this, or maybe you just like, I don't know. It's entertainment, for sure. Well, like, there's not a lot of owners out there on Twitter.
If you were a Mets fan, you would already be just numb to the world, basically, I think.
Yeah, that's true. This is just a different flavor of previous despair, probably, from a Mets perspective. Matz is, like you said, he's a good four, potentially five. He's probably worth something like $10 million a year. I was sort of assumed the whole time it was going to be on a three-year contract. If the Blue Jays had signed him back on a three-year contract at around $10 million a year, I don't think that would have been the worst thing in the world. But it's tough to imagine them, and we'll hear rumors and we'll get to it, getting a sort of a higher level starter, like a middle of the rotation, top of the rotation starter, like the Robbie Rays of the world, and then going and spending this amount of money on Matz as well. So in a sense, I almost figured that the better outcome for the Blue Jays would be to let Matz go anyway, because it would increase their chances of kind of landing that big fish, whether it's starter or infield, to be fair. It's just hard to see them in free agency signing Matz to this sort of medium money and then going and getting the big money for the other hypothetical guy. It's funny because we talked about Berríos, and that contract seemed to have total consensus in kind of the Blue Jays Twitter sphere, for lack of a better term. And this is kind of the same. I feel like everyone's on board with Berríos, and everyone's kind of on board for letting Matz go at this, if this is the price point.
I think that's true, yeah. And I think a lot of people, I forget who summed it up well or best on my Twitter, who was they were just like, I'm preparing myself to be real happy if Matz resigns and real happy if they let him walk. And I think that was that's basically where everybody was at on that. 4 years for, like, that's just, for that guy is too much. Like, I think you want, if you're going to give a multi-year deal to a pitcher, even though like the you know, the average annual value is what 11 million, something like that. That's doable. But I think that they were definitely like sort of shopping in the shallower end, you know, on the shorter term stuff. You know, we heard about them being in on Syndergaard and Verlander would have been a real good idea. Andrew Heaney, apparently they were right there on him as well. I mean, all those are, you know, all this is in gigantic air quotes.
Because they're always right there.
Yeah, supposedly. Exactly. But we're beyond the point also where like that sounds like a PR exercise, right? It doesn't feel like hearing that they're right there on somebody is just to make us believe that they, you know, they, oh, we do have money to spend. We're just not spending. We came second place. No, like they will spend money at some point. But yeah, to me, it's like it's either top end of the market or shorter term. And so Matt's kind of fell in that middle zone where it didn't really make a lot of sense, I guess.
Yeah, he's the sort of player where you kind of hope that you can develop someone or get a bargain and get similar production. And often you can't. And that goes wrong and you kick yourself and you think, damn, I should have actually just spent some money on this instead of thinking I was smart enough to do it. And that's sort of what happened with the Blue Jays bullpen last year, right? Instead of kind of spending money, they were like, oh, we can cobble together our own development and bargains, and then we can allocate those resources elsewhere and be more aggressive with that and go get a Semien, for instance. And that worked really well in the sense that Semien was awesome, and it worked really poorly in the sense that the bullpen was terrible. So sometimes you end up being thankful you have a Steven Matz around, and you're putting too much trust in that combination of development and bargain or reclamation guys or whatever you want to call that. But I don't think this is the one. And Eno Saris had a good tweet about how reliant Matz is on velocity, because his fastball, he's got a very weird fastball. It's sort of like technically a sinker, but he basically throws it like it's a four-seamer. Like he does get his ground balls, but he elevates it a lot, and it's just not that great a pitch from an action perspective. He did get some velocity boost in 2020, carried that over into 2021. That was a big part of his success. And it was kind of like, if he's throwing 95 plus, it's a good pitch. And if it's a little bit below that, and that was kind of the split that Saris did. And he was like, if this pitch is 95 plus, it's doing really well. And if it's anything less than that, it's a very hittable pitch. And when you're talking about 4 years, a guy entering his 30s, like that velocity could go down, and that makes it a little bit of a tough toolbox to trust when he's so reliant on this fastball's got to have that punch behind it because the action is just not doing anything interesting.
Yeah, that 4 years is a long time, it turns out.
Yeah, it's a while. It's a while when you get, for sure. And I think this also opens the door for the idea of, again, it's a tricky issue, but like, do you want to do the thing where your fifth starter spot is sort of an open competition spot? And generally speaking, you don't, because that either, even if that works out, somebody probably gets injured anyway. So then you're eating into your depth. But for the Blue Jays, the situation is a little bit different because we do have kind of the lurking specter of Nate Pearson in there, who in theory, you'd want him to have an opportunity to win a spot, even if we're not super optimistic about exactly how that will go or what the innings look like or whether he can stay healthy. The last thing you want to do is kind of shut the door on him as well, because the ceiling is not going away as much as the floor. The floor has fallen out for Pearson. There's no floor anymore, but the ceiling is still there, and you still want to kind of create a path for this guy.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, I don't think you want to build your roster around him at this point, or like the pitching side of your roster. But yeah, he's like very intriguing, and obviously they like him a lot. And obviously, you know, even the fact that we're still talking about him as a potential starter speaks to that. And it's I don't know, it's that's going to be interesting, because he just doesn't have the innings. Also, like, if he is 2016 Aaron Sanchez, like, are they at the end of the year going to be like, okay, well, this is too much, like because he just hasn't built up in that way. And maybe because he's been a professional, and we count innings in terms of like what's on the FanGraphs page or whatever, and obviously they throw more than that, and non-competitive innings, but at least that like helps him build up. So it's probably not quite as bad as it looks if you just like look at the raw numbers in terms of like competitive innings. But he, you know, the workload just isn't there for him. So he's, you know, last year would have made more sense to have built your roster around having him as a piece of, as the of the rotation. And yeah, I think they, and I think Ross Atkins has said this, and I think, I don't know if it was on at the Letters with Bennett Arden or when, but recently he was like, you know, he ideally guys like him, Anthony Kay, Thomas Hatch, he quite notably did not mention Trent Thornton.
I don't think you do at this point.
I don't think you do either. Yeah, that's been disappointing. But no, but like was like, well, ideally they will force their way into the conversation. They'll you know make their own like, jobs for themselves, sort of the way Alec Manoah did, I guess, this year.
Yeah, and again, pitchers get injured consistently, right? Like you just need to make those plans with all those guys. So Pearson is kind of the six. It's not the end of the world. I guess what I'm saying is that I don't necessarily hate the idea of, let's say they go and get another pitcher and then you've got, you know, Manoah, Berríos, and Ryu, and then pitcher Y, and then leaving that last spot to Stripling, Pearson. Like, I don't think that's a disaster. Stripling isn't great, but for a fifth starter, he's not the worst. And he also slots back into the bullpen fairly easily if Pearson makes a move, if one of the other young guys, for whatever reason, is able to make a move. Again, you probably want that to be your sixth spot just because of the inevitability of injuries. But I do think there's a scenario where they just go get one more starter as opposed to the idea of they need to replace both these guys.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, you're kind of, you're leaving, they would be leaving themselves exposed for the first, you know, 3 months of the season. In a way that they may not want to, but yeah, like I don't know, even, the rotation was strong last year. It turned out, and so I think yeah, if you add a Robbie Ray, for example, that would be the obvious example to that group, and you have Ryu, Ray, Manoah, Berríos, whoever's the fifth starter, that doesn't matter that much. And so, and I think that's sort of probably where they're at, right? Like I think that the Atkins has said again. I don't know if it was on that podcast or I think it was after. I think it was at the Berríos press conference, was saying, you know, one starter, ideally two, basically, or two starters, maybe we can get away with one. And that's probably right. Though the market is dwindling a bit, it's also the thing on them.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the guys that they've, like you said, I don't think that them being in on guys and then falling away at the last second is necessarily the sort of PR thing that it used to be. We will see them spend money on somebody. Like you said, it would be pretty disastrous, in fact, if they spent no money in this right. offseason after what they lost. Speaking of spending money, interesting news this week with in regards to ownership, which is interesting because this seems to come up. I don't know if it's not once a year. It seems to come up from time to time. The idea that, you know, the Blue Jays are not part of Rogers' core business. This is an asset that continues to gain in value. It's a way for the company, if they spin them off, to make a pretty significant chunk of money. I also, just reading about the Rogers Shaw of all of this, it kind of goes to show my level of understanding of how these type of things work, where it's like, oh, it's $26 billion, but you just buy it with $20 billion in debt. That seems like a lot anyway. And it seems like selling the Blue Jays doesn't actually really eat into that much. It also, if you look at investments from an investment point of view, like MLB teams are this scarce commodity. And that's why they continue to raise in value so much, because they're just not, I mean, they might expand at some point, but they're not going to expand to 30 more teams. So, and there, you know, there's the whole prestige aspect and egomaniac billionaires, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot going on, but like, it seems like unless Rogers really has to, and again, I've made it clear in just the last few seconds that I don't know a lot about corporate strategy. But unless they really need this money, it seems like the Blue Jays are an asset that is going to increase in value. Like, it's, sports franchise has been incredible investments over the last few years. And that's even beyond all the broadcast rights stuff and the way they sell that back to the media arm and the money to be made there. It strikes me as a little bit odd overall.
Fair. I think first of all, yes, you're absolutely right that they've been incredible investments. And that's, I think, the lens that everybody should be looking at all of this stuff through, or anything financial about the Jays or about any team through. Like, for example, I don't know if it was 2000 or 2001, but whenever Rodgers bought the team, they bought the team and the stadium. If you add those both together, it was probably about $200 million. They're now valued at $2 billion, which means that over about 20 years, they've made $1.8 billion, which is about $90 million, which is $90 million a year. So even if they ran at a loss in several of those years, a loss, quote unquote, they still did real well. Because if they spent beyond what their revenues were, the equity in the franchise still was $90 million on average per year. That is obviously a very valuable property. What I think about what's going on with the situation is probably stadium related, right? Because they're financing this Shaw deal with debt. Rodgers, like you say, $20 billion is going to have to be borrowed in order to make that deal happen. I think just having another giant amount of debt on the books is not great for the stock price, which is obviously paramount over there. So spinning it out into another company where it might be able to better finance the debt that's going to have to happen to do whatever they're going to do at the Sky Dome or the new park that's going to be slightly south of there, which I think are probably the two options on the table. Makes sense. And also, $2 billion, if they could get $2 billion for the Jays and they can get $1.5 billion for their stake in MLSE and just like put that into a separate company that's still owned by Edward Rodgers, which I think is sort of where it seems to be going. That doesn't pay down their debt for the Shaw deal, but that's a sizable chunk. So that seems to be the way that is probably going to go, or that's where the thinking is, I would say.
Yeah, I guess the thing for me is that it has been such a good investment. There's no reason to believe it won't continue to be a good investment. That unless you really need that money, it's just like if that's a stock that I own, the Blue Jays, well, and I own
that's another
one
option,
share.
Right?
Yeah, there you go.
Andrew Wilson's piece that was tracking shares. Could be Green Bay Packers style, except one guy still owns the team. You just have a stock that like follows the revenues of the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I know a couple of Green Bay Packers shareholders. I think they're happy with that arrangement. It would be kind of the exact opposite, if you can imagine, of sort of like a faceless corporation yeah. owning your favorite sports team to you feeling like you own a little bit. I mean, I think that's a cool idea overall. Something that you got into a little bit when you wrote about this is the idea of like, this is no guarantee that things are going to be better and, I mean, or worse, to be honest. There's been a lot of animosity with Blue Jays fans and this Rodgers ownership. And, I think, to be honest, there's going to be animosity with fans and almost any ownership because all MLB owners don't spend as much as they can afford to spend, correct. As much to make your team better as they could.
Yeah.
So there probably isn't an owner you'll be quote unquote happy with. But, in recent years, to be honest, the Blue Jays have only really spent really low amounts of money at times when it wasn't realistic to be competitive. I'm not saying that they couldn't have added more here or there or whatever, like you'd like to have the Dodgers ownership group be your owners. But I think there's kind of some animosity with Rodgers, and the assumption is like, oh, if you got out from under the corporation that's obsessed with the bottom line and accountable to the shareholders and you found something that was a little bit more independent or more focused on the baseball team itself, that would be significantly better. And I'm not 100% convinced that that's true. Like if I'm reading this as a Blue Jays fan, this article in Globe and Mail, which to be fair, also, Shai Davi at Sportsnet wrote a little bit of a piece saying, nothing's imminent and maybe we'll see how it plays out. But my first instinct isn't to say, wow, this is great news. It's really a wait and see, to be honest.
For sure, which is wild because for 20 years it's not felt like that. It's been like, oh man, it'd be great if Rodgers didn't own the Blue Jays. But I think you're right. Yeah. I think that, you know, the perils are sort of the same no matter what happens going forward. Like if Edward Rogers owns the Blue Jays as an entity in himself and not the corporation, you know, we're still subjected to his whims, his finances. Like he could very easily make them not, you know, cut their payroll and be like, okay, we're going to be a cheaper team than this. And just as Rogers could do. I do think that like the Shaw deal and the fact that they're going to have so much debt to make that happen, is perilous, I guess, for the Blue Jays, right? Like, I think that, like, going, like, that happening at the corporate level, they are going to have to think about their share price or their stock price. That's, you know, that is a thing for them. And may have to, like, start cutting corners elsewhere in order to pretty up the books, which could be bad for the Jays, and which would be a reason to be happy in the near term to have them out from underneath Rogers. But like, the ownership situation definitely has seemed to be pretty good lately. Like, Mark Shapiro in the Shapiro era, it has not been as contentious as in the Beeston or the Godfrey era. He seems to have really done a great job of selling the vision of, like, here's how we make money on a baseball team, which seems to have worked, and they seem to have been backing him. And partly that's probably because Edward Rogers is, you know, vanity is maybe not the right word, but it probably is the right word. Like, I think there's an aspect of that, and there's also, I mean, I think they can make money. I mean, this is a marquee market. It's a, like, the TV numbers are crazy compared to, like, even the Yankees, right? Like, there's more people watching Blue Jays games than Yankees games because they're nationally televised. But still, like, it's a cash cow, and, you know, if they're going to pretend that it's not, they're always going to pretend that it's not, but it absolutely is. And I think that they are right, and I think that was something that people talked about for a very long time, and I know I talked about it for a very long time. It's like, you know, I don't know, spend on this team and it make this team good, and people will watch, and they're like, all the benefits of that will follow. And they finally seem to have convinced the people at Rogers that that's correct. So they know what they have, and I think that will stay the same regardless of who technically owns the team.
I think you mentioned a good point there, which is the role of Mark Shapiro, right? I think a lot of fans really loved, you know, Beeston and Anthopoulos and previous characters, especially Beeston.
Oh, man.
For a variety of reasons.
I had sort of interject, but, like, I saw that it was like, I forget however many years ago that Gibbons was rehired. And I've told this on, I don't know if on this podcast or on podcasts before, but I was there at the...
Was that 2013? Was it for that supposedly great team that he was brought back for?
That's right, So I guess it would have been 2012, like November 2012, because that was the 2013 team. And I remember being at the press conference was in the dome, in the, you know, in the bowels of that that building. And I remember being, like, super packed into there. I think, like, Bruce Arthur was, like, was behind me, and you know, everybody's just, like, crowding in. And suddenly I realized, oh, Paul Beeston's, like, literally also right behind me. And when somebody from TVA or whatever, somebody asked Anthopoulos a question in French, and Beeston was just, like, literally, like, just elbowing everyone around him, just like, this fucking guy, do you believe it? Look, he's just talking in French now. he couldn't believe it. And it was just, and everybody was just like, yeah, man, that's cool. Like, and he, I don't know, just a gregarious kind of character.
He's a character.
Yeah.
And we've all had run-ins with Paul Beeston, and yeah, they tend to be interesting. You know, in much of the world, very typical to speak multiple languages. In a huge percentage of the world, correct. Not really considered an accomplishment.
Correct.
It's just like the North American viewpoint. Anyway, like, those guys are characters, and they're kind of like, oh, they're independent thinkers and cowboys, and they're Canadian, and it's great. And then when Mark Shapiro came in, a lot of people felt like, oh, this guy's really buttoned up. He's not really like speaking our language. He doesn't really get us. And, you know, there's degrees to which that's fair and unfair.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
But he, you know, he whose language he does speak is Roger's language, yes. Right? Like he's the one who has done a really good job interfacing with an ownership that, yeah, is a little bit less removed from the day-to-day of a baseball team than most owners could potentially be, in part because he is very much like the capital E executive, kind of even beyond being a baseball executive. And he's, like you said, he's sold them on the vision and been a really key figure in all of this. And maybe if you don't have a Mark Shapiro type who can build that bridge between baseball operations and ownership, then when you have an owner like Rogers, it's a little bit unusual being a corporate owner, being more detached potentially. The results aren't as good, but I think Shapiro deserves a lot of credit for being able to get people on all sides of the aisles to buy into what he thinks this team can be, what he thinks the franchise can be. And, you know, that involves, you know, hosing taxpayers in Florida and like not necessarily all things that are great, but it does involve things that build the Blue Jays towards being a better franchise. And they probably, as great as the 2015 team was, they are probably a better franchise today than they were when he arrived.
Yeah, I think absolutely. It's, I mean, was it like the Big Ten, like whatever conference? They wanted him to be the commissioner or something like that. Like, I mean, this is a guy who clearly people understand, knows the language of the boardroom as well as he knows the sports stuff. Like, I don't know. I think if you talk to someone from Cleveland, they may have other opinions. I know that they don't feel great about their stadium sometimes, even though it's, you know, it was a lovely stadium at first, and obviously the team now called the Guardians I think that was an ownership thing, but it wasn't always as well funded as it should be, and you know, obviously had to sell off players, but they did a very good job of, like, and you still see how great they are at, you know, player development and especially on the pitching side. You know, they just seem to, it seems every year Cleveland has guys who just show up and it's like, oh, they're really great. Oh, you got, oh, Julian Merriweather. Wow. But, I think that's absolutely true. And I think it's nice that people are starting to appreciate that. But also the job is not done. So, you know,
well, yeah, they didn't make the playoffs. Great place,
but yeah. They have to see this through before we're putting their, you know, a banner hired Mark Shapiro up on the stadium there.
Yeah, I think you can retire Shatkins without coronating anyone.
Right. Yes. That's probably where we're at. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you probably have to feel more positive than negative about Blue Jays sort of baseball operations at this particular moment in time. But like you said, the job's not done. And, you know, there is a world, and it's not a world maybe too many people want to entertain this timeline, but there's a world where they squander Vlad's prime and you know, maybe various injuries happen and it just never comes together. Like, they're in a very difficult division. It's not going to get easy anytime soon. And, you know, even with these building blocks they have with Berríos, and maybe they struggle to extend any of these guys, like, it's interesting when the Wander Franco extension came down, all these people are saying, like, oh, why aren't they doing this with Vlad? Why aren't they doing this with Bo? And it's like, it takes two to do that, man. Like, the Blue Jays, I'm sure, would absolutely, if the Blue Jays could get Vladdy to sign a 12-year contract, I'm sure they would have, first of all, it's a very different situation in terms of, like, service time and where they are. So you couldn't make that comparable from a money perspective. But just the idea that Vladdy and Bo are in the market to sign a huge extension, it's not necessarily true. Like, the guys are in different situations. You talk about before, you don't want to make too many assumptions about a family and finances, yada yada yada, but these are like second generation ball players who came up early enough that their parents made tons of money. Vlad had a good signing bonus. He's going to make big money through arbitration. Bo set up to make big money too. The pressures on them might be slightly different that way. They have the potential to hit free agency at an incredibly young age and make buckets of money. It's going to be interesting how people perceive the lack of extensions we're seeing now. And it may well be that the extensions come at some point. But I think there's some notion that, like, wow, the Rays went out and got their guy. Look at how the Padres went out and got their guy. Like, why can't the Blue Jays do that too? And it's not nearly as easy as that, I don't think.
No, and like Tatis's dad didn't make nearly as much as Vlad's dad did. And you know, yeah, you're right. You don't want to assume. I don't know how the family finances work or anything like that. But you know, they'll be fine if he doesn't. You know, if he doesn't get, he doesn't have to sell himself short for that. Nor does Bo. And that absolutely makes a difference. That's, I mean, you know, I think that the terribly team friendly deals that the Braves signed with Albies and Acuña Jr. are, the other side of that coin a little bit. And also, I mean, just like free agency, just in general, is appealing, right? I think that, you know, as it should be to anyone, because it's such a ridiculous system that they exist in, right? Where it's like, oh, you have 6 years, maybe 6 years in the minors, and maybe and then 6 years in the majors. Like, that's like, you could, like, there are literally guys who are indentured to a team for 12 years before they can choose, you know, where they want to work. They have no other way to pursue what they want to do. And I don't think that the Blue Jays have, you know, made it a priority to make it, to make, you know, Toronto appealing and the things that they do as an organization appealing. But yeah, I what Barrios did, I think that's maybe underscores how remarkable that is that, like, after a couple months, it's just like, yeah, this is the place. They're going to pay me the market value, maybe less, and to just agree to sign on because of how, partly how they value the city and the you know, all that stuff, which is, you know, that's more probably PR spin than like the first priority, but like, you know, how the organization works and how they work with him and all the stuff they are doing, which is something I was talking to people on Twitter about. You know, like, it's more than, you know, Pete Walker's great. It's more than just Pete Walker, I think, a lot of times. Because they are very focused on making it a great place for families of the players, but also for how, you know, Atkins and Chaparro will talk about giving players resources to help make themselves better. And that's, you know, I think that's something that they have tried to do, obviously. And yet, I don't know, I can understand a young player being like, well, you know, play in the field a bit more. And especially because, you know, you see that payday down the line, and if you're Bo or Vlad, and you don't have to think about as much, you know, life-changing money because your life has already been changed by money. You know, it's just, like you say, it's not exactly comparable to the Franco situation.
Yeah, and, you know, let's, taking aside the Toronto desirability thing, and I think it has definitely increased, I think there's also, you know, for a lot of players, there's an impediment to the idea of living abroad. It's, you know, people get really sensitive about that. It has nothing to do with how great Toronto is as a city. Like, I was personally, you know, I'm born and raised in Toronto. I've lived here for all but 4 years of my life. Like, I only have great things to say about Toronto. That's not what I'm trying to say. But there are certain players for whom Toronto's just not really going to be the place they dream of. And if I, you know, if I have the opposite, like, let's say I'm a ball player from Toronto and I get drafted to the Texas Rangers. And that's just the first place that I really wouldn't want to go that pops to my head. But, you know, realistically, I spent, yeah, like I said, you said, like, maybe 12 years kind of in and around that area, probably not where I would have wanted to put my roots. And I have the ability to go out and command a huge contract and go almost anywhere I want to go in the entire league. That's definitely something that's going to be an option that I think about exploring. Like, we do get a lot of extensions, and that's because it's hard for guys to say no to this level of money sometimes. But at the end of the day, the idea of having the choice, which, yeah, it's a weird world they live in where they don't get the choice. Like, we all have the choice out there to go and work where we want to work, by and large. Like, you don't graduate from a university and get drafted to, like, one of the big software companies. Like, oh, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't know. So I just don't think that you can hang that on the organization if that does. And it may well get, I'm not saying it's not going to get done, or that any guys secretly, that Bobichet secretly hates Toronto. I'm just saying that, like, you know, the idea of playing somewhere else, especially for guys who there are other places that are kind of closer to home or closer to what they're comfortable with, is not the craziest idea in the world that they wouldn't sign an extension here.
Yeah. I don't, you know what? And if this is Bob McCowan's podcast, we'd be talking about trading Bo, apparently. So,
is that something that was discussed? Yeah. I mean,
oh, that was weird.
Am I being outed as not a daily listener?
I absolutely am not. But I saw John Morosi was on there. I'm like, all right, let's see what he says. And then they got into talking about trading Bichette. I'm like, okay.
Here's what you could get a lot for him. there's the benefit. If you want to trade Bo Bichette, you could get a lot for him.
I was like, I think maybe Bob was benefited by being in an environment every day where people talked about sports instead of at his house, where the weird opinions just get more entrenched.
Yeah, it's it's good to have an ecosystem for sure.
Same.
Good to have. Yeah. But you know, I'm doing it from my apartment. So.
Yeah, I'm like, oh wait.
I mean, I was gonna say, like, are we any different? It feels like the weird opinions could very easily leak out over here. Let's bring it down to earth for a second, where opinions can't be too weird. Because I did want to circle back on some of the pitching market stuff. That's kind of been the topic in the early going of the offseason. I say early going, but it's kind of potentially going to end in a couple of days. So it's getting late early, as they say. Mm-hmm. But the names the Blue Jays have been attached to is really, well, lately, other than the ones that have come off the board, is really sort of Robbie Ray and Kevin Gausman. And I still think they get a lot of Ray because people don't know how to perceive other teams' interest in Ray, although we've seen people diving in on Ray, like various Red Sox, White Sox, etc. So it's not like there's no rumors about him. Gausman is interesting too because he is a guy the Blue Jays have pursued before, and we've seen in the past there'll be times where the Blue Jays really, and this is not particular to the Blue Jays, but they like a player and then they'll continue to think about that player, and then when they get the opportunity, they'll get him later. Like that happened with Simeon Woods Richardson, for instance. They wanted to draft him. They didn't get the opportunity to draft him later. They pursued him in a trade.
Oh, that's like an Anthopoulos thing, too. It's like, oh, Alex always gets his guys eventually in the end, right?
Eventually. When they're washed up.
World Series winner.
So Kevin Gausman is very much in play, and those guys are in a pretty similar bucket, to be honest. Like, I know Ray's the guy with the hardware right now, but if you look at Ray and Gausman's stats this year, they're pretty similar. You could make an argument that Gausman had a better season, but a lot of that is going to undermine what drove Ray Cy Young, and we don't need to get into FIP wars. However, if you're the Blue Jays, are you more interested in one of those guys? Clearly you're happy to have either of them, but let's put it this way. Is there a case to pursue Gausman instead of Ray? Because Ray is sort of the guy, you know, someone who has an interest in coming back potentially, someone who is obviously a huge fan favorite, Cy Young winner, all the positive we can say about Ray. Is there a counter case for let's do Gausman instead?
Internally to the Blue Jays, probably. We're obviously not privy to that. I don't know. Yeah, Gausman's really good too. And like you say, they have pursued him in the past. They liked Ray. And I think this is sort of part and parcel of what their entire kind of strategy, which is like, okay, there's like a million paths we could take, and none of them are necessarily wrong. So I think I think it's just whoever works at the number that they want, or works closest to the number that they want, is where they would go with that. But I think, you know, I would be happy with Gausman and not Ray. I think a lot of Blue Jays fans probably would not be, just because, you know, the devil that you know. But yeah, Gausman could be really good too. I don't know. I have not looked too deeply into the red flags on him potentially. Certainly not to the extent as I have on Robbie Ray, which there are a few.
Yeah, I mean,
he's got those pants, man. Let's come on, bring back Robbie Ray.
It's true. I mean, maybe you could convince Gosman to wear the same pants to help ease the transition. Like, listen, man, you're coming into a hard spot. People are going to be primed not to like you. Here's something you can just throw their way, and it's gonna really help you from a PR perspective. I think you're right in that. Let's say the Blue Jays sign Gosman and then Ray signs for sort of a similar deal elsewhere. I could see Blue Jays fans being like, why the hell didn't we just bring back the guy who won the damn Cy Young, like, with us, actively wants to work with us, and we already love him. Why are we getting Gosman instead? The interesting thing for me is there's a lot of similarities between these two pitchers. Mm-hmm. Like, they're both essentially two-pitch guys. Like, Gosman is the fastball and the big splitter. And then Ray's the fastball slider. I mean, the splitter is fun. It's a lot of fun. I kind of like it more in theory, but that's just because you don't see it as much, to be honest. It's not that I think it's a better pitch necessarily. It's just fun to watch. They're similar in that they have the third time through the order penalty hit them really bad. That's probably because they're both two-pitch pitchers.
I mean, that's also every pitcher.
That's every pitcher, but them especially. And they both are sort of not great on contact management. So they give up hard hits, but why they're good is because they miss a lot of bats and they keep the walks under control, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, I don't know. I think it is kind of a coin flip. You could probably make a similar case for Gosman having, you know, red flags like Ray. He's had some pretty poor seasons in the past. His history, his track record is a little bit more mediocre. Like, even when before Ray was bad in 2020, he was probably better than Gosman had been in the past. Ray's walk thing is probably a bigger red flag than either of them have, if you're sure that he can repeat that in terms of, you know, throwing strikes consistently. But hell, he did it all of last year. They're both durable. They're both coming off great years. They're both essentially the same age. This is their best platform year. I don't know. Like, it,
I will say this, because I'm looking at his Fangraphs page right now. First half, Kevin Gosman, 1.73 ERA. Second half, 4.42. So that is a red flag to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a red flag.
It's the opposite of Steven Matz, who had some bad competition, but also made some changes and was real good down the stretch. But also, it's arbitrary, and it's like, yeah. So
it does. Yeah, that doesn't do a ton for me either way. I think honestly,
you have a great season. It's great.
Very happy to get either of them.
I think so.
And getting neither of them, I'm not sure if that's a disaster. But if you get neither of them, then the hope of kind of filling the Robbie Ray spot with not the same level of production, but something similar at least, is maybe dying out, because I don't see the Kershaws or the Scherzers making their way down. And maybe that's unfair, but it's hard to imagine that happening.
No, I think that's right. But also the Robbie Ray spot is kind of filled by Barrios, right? Like, he only had like 12 starts here. So this is this is what the spin of the Blue Jays would be, is like, well, you know, you're going to have Springer for a full season, and you're going to have Barrios for a full season. And that will make up a lot of the gap of, like, the war you're going to lose from not having Robbie Ray and Marcus Semien.
Yeah, I mean, that's the huge idea, like you said, is not necessarily that you're going to be able to replace those two guys exactly, because it's virtually impossible to do that. Although, yeah, maybe if you do Ray or Gosman, that dream is more alive. But you're not going to get it on the infield side against Semien. So it's people that improve. Like, you know, Bo and Vlad, as good as they are, still young enough to improve. It's also that your bullpen's less of a disaster. It's also that you get full season of Manoah, full season of Barrios, right, full season of Springer. Although, you know, those things are not guaranteed. No. And then,
that happens often. It turns out that Springer plays a full season.
And then you put maybe some Gabriel Moreno into that mix to raise your ceiling at catcher. And that's maybe Kevin Biggio gives you some competence at second base, as opposed to the disaster he was last year. you can make an argument of the Blue Jays can repeat the success of 2021 without them signing free agents that directly have the same value as Semien Rhea. And you have to be able to make that argument, because if you're relying on, oh, we're going to just take back 10 WAR in free agency, no problem, that's incredibly hard to do.
Yeah.
And they almost certainly won't do it. But I don't think that's a reason to despair if you're a Blue Jays fan. You can't think it like, oh, they'll never be able to replace this guy, therefore they won't be as good in 2022. And I don't think that's, as much as we talked last year about how 2021 is a specific opportunity because of these seasons that they're getting. And it was. And it was a missed opportunity. And it really sucked for the Blue Jays. That's a, like, last year at the end, and the way the Nationals blew it, and the way the Rays couldn't score a run, like, all these things, I'm not telling you guys not to feel hurt about it, because there's plenty of justification for that. But you can have a very, very strong 2022 that doesn't involve signing the next Cy Young winner in free agency and the next MVP candidate. And I don't think that's sort of pie in the sky, rose colored glasses, overly optimistic thinking. I think you can find those outcomes. It's not unreasonable, especially if you get at least one more good pitcher and if you invest something in the infield. Like, if they do nothing, if they did nothing from here on out, I wouldn't say that. But presuming that they are going to do something, which seems like a likely course of events, it's not crazy to assume that they can do as well or better in 2022, even without replacing these guys, quote unquote.
I think that's right. I think also, though, you know, they probably think about July 31st more than we do, as you know, like the Andrew Heaney thing, for example. Like, apparently they were off finalist again, gigantic air quotes on that. And I can see that. I can see that making sense, just the financially and like in terms of where the rotation is. And you know, that's the thing you can fix at the trade deadline, and they can still do it. I think I said this last week, but like, I forget who said it. I don't know if it was Jeff Passan or whatever, but like Passan, I don't even know. But so, like, the bones of the team are very strong at this point. And I think there's a lot that can be done, you know, midstream, you know, at the trade deadline to fix whatever issues they have. So they don't, I think a lot of people get sort of hung up on the idea that, oh, they have to have the perfect opening day roster. It's like, well, no, they don't necessarily, because they have a pretty good roster, and they should still be in the playoff race by the end of July. And that could also be a point where they can not even just make trades, but call up Gabriel Moreno, for example, or, you know, do things. So it's, I don't know, I think it whatever's going to happen next season is going to play out over a longer period than just Then you know, just making sure that the roster is optimized for the start of April. But also, they do sort of, I don't know, and if you listen to Atkins talk about it, they do sort of think about it in two periods, as at, you know, there's the offseason and there's the trade deadline, and there's not a lot you really do in between. So I'm not trying to like say that this isn't an important time, and that, you know, that. Or make excuses for the fact that for the potential that they don't, you know, do as exciting things as we would like them to do. But there is still that, you know, down the line potential, especially now that having Berríos in the fold for that as long as they have is really, really huge. Like, I mean, I know we already talked about it last week, but like, man, that's awesome. He's great. He's so great. And it's going to be here forever. It's amazing. But yeah, I think I don't know. I don't think that changes how you do this offseason. And I think that's partially why they structured that contract the way that they did, and didn't, you know, they didn't front load it for sure. And ideally that means that they're going to go and find some guys for the next year, and I think Shai wrote a piece this week about how maybe the trade route is their best option, which I think, you know, with Sonny Gray out there and with the Oakland guys, Alcantara had it looks like, I don't know if he officially signed with the Marlins again, but that looks like they're finally, you know, but Miami still has guys and could use an outfielder. there's still tons of pathways, even though it seems like the free agent market is dwindling a bit. But yeah, I don't know. It's all real interesting. I would love for them to do something interesting and meaningful before the stupid lockdown that's going to, you know, suck 2 months out of the winter.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've got podcasts coming up. I'd like there to be content in them.
Wouldn't that be nice?
An ideal scenario. I mean, I don't want to be too optimistic, but it would be good to see something happen. You bring up an important point, though. When we talk about the offseason, we continue to talk through the frame of an opening day roster and what are they going to have to start the season. The reality is you can go into the season with a couple of holes. I mean, everyone has holes in some regard, under the understanding that if you're in the mix, you can make those additions at the deadline and make that. And that doesn't always work as well as sure. It worked in 2021, which arguably, I guess it didn't work because they didn't make the playoffs, mm-hmm. But it did essentially work. It's not always going to be like that, but you do keep that in your back pocket. It's just harder to talk about because we don't know who's going to be available at that time, what Blue Jays prospects are going to be on the up and up, look like good treasure. It's a lot easier to be like, oh, you know what pitchers are available? These guys. Therefore, the Blue Jays should get them. And so it's kind of it's a real unknown, like what's going to be out there, the 2022 trade deadline. But we definitely don't give enough thought to it, to be honest, because that is, yeah, it's a way that Atkins in the front office conceptualizes building the team. And even though they've generally been reticent to trade away prospects, they showed last year that they're willing to do in the right deal. And it looks like they'd be willing to do it again this year under the right circumstances. So I guess that is something to keep in mind if the Blue Jays get through this offseason, whatever the hell this offseason looks like, right. And there's a couple spots on the roster that you don't feel comfortable with. Well, they could be addressed later, especially if they're guys that can, you know, plug that. You know, I just mentioned Kevin Biggio bouncing back. Maybe he is their starting second baseman this year, and maybe that doesn't go great. Maybe what we saw in 2021, is maybe not that bad, but similar level. It's just kind of quote unquote not acceptable for a starting player. And then maybe it's an infielder they're looking at the deadline. Like it's often pitching that people assume. But yeah, he's an example of a guy that maybe you give a half season run to. It's like, okay, well, we think you can maybe do this. And if you can't, we'll find that out in a couple months. And that's a position we'll look to address potentially at the deadline. There's a lot that goes into that. But in the offseason, we fixate on who we know is available. And of the people we know is available, the list is getting shorter and shorter. But we're definitely not at that panic level for the Blue Jays, especially with all the options available in the trade market as well.
For sure. It's just, you know, if they were in literally any other division, you'd kind of just feel more comfortable about the idea of going into the season and we'll fix it later. It's like, I don't know, you can get buried very quickly in a division with the Rays and the Red Sox and the Yankees. So that's the tightrope they're kind of walking, I think.
Yeah, they're still in this division, unfortunately, and that is an evergreen sentiment, and we'll leave it there. We got to save some content for the weeks to come, the possibly barren weeks. So we'll see you on Friday. It's going to be a crapshoot. What's going on at that point? If we get lucky, the Blue Jays will do a transaction, because that's really what we're all living for. Is we're living transaction to transaction. So thanks for tuning in. Hopefully we'll see you next week, and we appreciate reviews, subscriptions, all the stuff you do. So raise the
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.